Tonight's learning is dedicated to Ilan Ishmas, Fega Rezel Bas Menachem Manish. Okay, Rabbi Yisrael, today we have the privilege of studying Parshas Ki Tsetse, a very, very jammed packed parsha, a lot to talk about. It actually has 74 mitzvahs in this week's parsha. Many, many mitzvahs, positive mitzvahs, and loisa says that we need to get to. It's interesting, the Ramban writes in his introduction to Sefer Devarim, that Sefer Devarim is not really about mitzvahs, it only has a few mitzvahs here and there. Well, this week's parasha, we find ourselves to have 74 mitzvahs, and there's a lot to talk about in Parashas Ki Tsetse. I must apologize in advance, I was a little under the weather this afternoon, so I did not have a chance to prepare as much as I usually would. And then with Mincha Maariv coming along, I don't even know where my papers are. So we're going to try our best to see what we can do. Where did my papers go? Let me get my jacket, see if my papers are there. Okay, in any case, I don't know where my papers went. That's not my paper either. Okay. I don't know where my papers went with my Maariv Mekirmas on them. So we're just in a fine, fine roll today. They're not there either? Give me 1 second. They're on the floor. Okay, there you go. Okay, we're just doing dandy here. Okay, let's get started. There's Parshas Ki Tsetse. The Torah opens up discussing war. Ki Tsetse la milchama al yivecha, when you'll go to war against your enemy. And the Torah discusses a very, very interesting parsha. The parsha called a Yifas Toyar. What does this parsha mean? The Torah tells us that when a person goes to war, and in the war he will see a very attractive woman who's not Jewish, and he will have a desire for her, and the Torah permits him to marry her. So the Rishonim point out that this week's parasha is really a continuation from last week's parasha. If you remember on last week's parasha, towards the end of the parasha Shoftim, we were discussing war. We were discussing that when you go to war, you have to make sure that you're able to handle the war. And the Torah decided, and the Torah discussed all the people that are exempt from war because they can't handle the war. And there's a very famous story during the Haskalah movement of the 1800s. So they put on a play. The non-frum put on a play to try to make fun of the frum. And in their play, they were trying to say, how would it look to get Jews to go to war? Meaning, what would it be like when we gathered up Jews to serve in the army? Because we know the Torah says, if a person sins, he doesn't join the army. So they had a whole spiel, a whole play, where, 50 Jews lined up, and then each Jew asked, okay, you ready to serve in the army? He says, no, I didn't have air, I can't serve. And he said, no, I can't serve. And they're left with two people that are able to go to war. I think the way it goes is, one was Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, I think maybe one was Reb Chaim Moizer, I forgot already, the Chafetz Chaim, one of those two. So when they told the Chafetz Chaim the story, he said, okay, that's the way it's supposed to be. That only people that attack a God-fearing Jew that are up on the Madrega to be a soldier, they're the ones who go to the army. The army's not just for the guy who's looking for the military benefits and get free college and, be a veteran for life. The Jewish army were those people that were on a Madrega to fight for Klal Yisrael. That was the end of last week's parsha. And then we took a break in between that with the story of the Egla Rufa. That's when a Jew dies and no one knows who killed him. And then we recontinue over here, Parshas Ki Tsetse, we're back into the discussion of war. I just want to mention a vart from Reb Ruderman. Reb Ruderman, the famed Nei Yisrael Rosh Yeshiva. Reb Ruderman pointed out, why is it that there is this break between war and Egla Rufa and then war again? Why didn't the Torah just continue with war and then let's start war again? So Reb Ruderman points out something which is already found in earlier commentaries, but it's something very fascinating. Reb Ruderman points out what the tendency is when a person goes to war and he's in battle and he's exposed to war, what normally happens is that life becomes much cheaper. Meaning when you're around people and they're just dying and they're being killed and they're being murdered and they're being shot, after a while the value of a life drops significantly from what it used to be. Because we're all affected by our surroundings. We're all affected by what we see. Therefore, says Reb Ruderman, the Torah needed to interrupt with Egla Rufa. What's Egla Rufa? Egla Rufa means one Jew died. And it's an unexplained mystery murder. So you might say to yourself, okay, big deal, one Jew died, go to war. Thousands of Jews die in battle. Said Reb Ruderman, the purpose of the Egla Rufa was to teach Klai, so you need to be sensitive to even one life. Even though you're surrounded by death and you're surrounded by murder, do not allow that to seep into who you are. Do not allow that to change your value system of one life. And even when one Jew dies, some unknown name Jew we never met, we don't know, but it's an unexplained murder. We have to be so careful in how we handle it. And I think it's a very important message, as the world we live in today is, we're seeing now a unbelievably desensitized value system to human life. We're watching now in the news, in the media, I'm not even talking about what goes on in the movies and on video games, where there's all this violence and shooting. I'm talking about in real life. Turn on, you know, live TV of what's going on in Wisconsin, of what's going on in other parts of the world, where people are burning things and destroying things. You start to lose that sensitivity of what does it mean, a life? What does it mean, someone else's property? We're watching what goes on in these different places. People are just destroying someone else's property, breaking someone else's car, smashing, setting fire. It's someone else's property. Where's the sensitivity? And the more we see this, it seeps into our lives also. As much as we're from Yidden, and we don't believe in rioting, and we don't believe in any of this stuff, but we're surrounded by it. It has an impact on our lives, because we're affected by what we see and by what we hear, and the world around us. Before the Torah starts again to discuss war in this week's parasha, the Torah wants us to remember last week. Remember the Egla Rufa. Remember the life of one Jew who was unnecessarily killed, and we don't know why. It's not business as usual. One life is essential. We spoke about this at length on Tisha B'Av, that very often in our churbanos as a nation, we always look at numbers. How many people died? It's not about how many people died, even if one person died. Right, what's the first question people ask when there's a terrorist attack in Eretz? So, how many people died? And if it would only be one person, then it was okay to be a terrorist attack. I understand the psyche. I get it. Obviously, the more people that die, the more horrific the tragedy is. But even one life is one life too many that we lost for whatever reason. And therefore, Zokta Bruderman, that's why before we pick up with the discussion of war, in this week's parasha, we have to remind ourselves the value of every single life. So that's the beginning of this week's parasha. You're going to go to war. We're going to go to battle. Kisetzei la'milchama. We're going to go to war. And Rashi tells us, what type of war is this? So we know there's two types of wars in Klal Yisrael's history. There's what's called a Melchemes HaMitzvah. That's any war that's obligatory. You have to go to war. And the Mishnah says in Saita, Melchemes HaMitzvah, everyone goes to war, even Chasen Mechupasai, even a Chasen leaves his Chasana, he leaves the Chuppah, whatever that means, to go to war. That's what's called a Melchemes HaMitzvah. Killing Amalek is deemed a Melchemes HaMitzvah. Then there's a Melchemes HaRishus. It's not a mitzvah, but you're allowed to go out and conquer and obtain land. Says Rashi, this type of war of Yifas Toyar is talking about a Mechemes Rishos. It's not a Mechemes HaMitzvah. We'll come back to why that's exactly important for our discussion, but that's what Rashi tells us at the beginning of the parsha. Now, if you read through the Pesukim, you'll notice that the Torah says, Ki Seitzeneh Melchama Alevech, when you go out to war on your enemies, plural. You have many enemies. We have many enemies today. We've had many enemies in the past. We are surrounded by enemies. But Hashem will place him. That's plural. That's singular. So the question is, do we have many enemies or do we have one enemy? What is it? So Reb Gifter makes the following observation. Many Mefarshim learn that this parish of Kisetzei La'Milchama is not only referring to a simple battle of war, but it's also referring to a Yetzer Hara battle. Right, we know the Pashas Kisetzi is always read during Elul, so obviously it's there to motivate us. So therefore the Mefarshim point out, the Baal Musa point out, that there's an element over here talking about the Yetzer Hara. Says with Gifter, the Yetzer Hara comes in many different forms. It sometimes looks like a question in business, sometimes it looks like a question in, should I eat this, shouldn't I eat this? The Yetzer Hara wears many hats. But Zokta Gifter, it's really only one person. He comes to you as many different people, because he'll come to you with many different forms of an Nisayan. But it's really one enemy, and his name is Yetzer Hara. He just comes and attacks you with many different types of tricks and tactics, but ultimately it's only one enemy, the enemy of the Yetzer Hara. Rav Moshe Bick, in the Sefer Chaim Moshe, points out something very interesting. He says that we as Jews live constantly with two types of enemies. There's two enemies that we live with. There is the enemy that is outwardly anti-Semitic. There's the enemy that minces no words and hides nothing. And they're very clear and open about what they think of us. They're open with their hatred and their distaste for Jewish people. That's one type of enemy that we have in our lives, which we've had many throughout our history. We've had Esav, and we've had the Romans, we've had the Greeks, and we've had Christians and Nazis, v'chulu, and the Arabs, adayim azeh. But then there's another group of enemies, says Rav Moshe Bick, that they're not so open with their hatred towards us. They might even say hello to you if they walk you past you in the street in the morning. But they're deep down, their hatred is there, but it's not out and in the open. Says Rami Shabik, the Torah says there's two types of enemies. The enemy that's outwardly anti-Semitic, he's the one we're going to pummel, we're going to destroy, we're going to knock out off the land. But the second type of enemy that's not outwardly anti-Semitic, but only harbors anti-Semitic thoughts, that one is not so bad. And that enemy is not so bad, says Rami Shabik. So that enemy, we're going to visit Shavisa Shivya, we'll take them captives, we'll let them live with us, because they're not openly anti-Semitic. They're not outwardly out to kill us, even though perhaps in the depths of their heart, they want to do that as well. So what's this whole idea over here? This whole idea of the Torah basically says you're going to be out in battle, and you're all over the place, mentally, emotionally, physically, and you're going to come across a very attractive woman. You're going to want to live with her. So the Torah says, fine, I'll let you. The Torah says, I'll let you. But you can't, you have to do something before you're allowed to live with this woman. First, you have to take into your house. The Torah says, very easy about Shavio, you'll see in captive, a woman who's Yifas Toya, you'll have a desire for her. You want to take her for a wife? So the Torah says, not so fast. First bring it into your house. Make her look repulsive. Take away all the beauty that she has. You have to make her shave her hair. She has to cut her nails or grow her nails, two different pshatim. But the point is, she can't look as attractive as she was when she started. And then the Torah says, she then has to cry. And then after all that, you're finally allowed to take this woman as a wife. Which again is a pella. She's not Jewish. You're all of a sudden now the Torah permits you to marry a non-Jewish woman. So Rashi quotes from the Gemara in Kedushin. What's going on over here? Says Rashi, Lo dibra Torah el keneged yetzahara. Says Rashi, quoting from the Gemara in Kedushin, Hashem says, I'm very practical. I understand that you're at war and you're in battle and your taiva is very strong. Hashem says, I know that if I don't give you this, you're going to do it anyways. Therefore, I'd rather you do it on my terms than on your terms. But says Rashi, I guarantee you, if you marry this woman, it will be a disaster. You will ultimately hate her, and it says afterwards, Kisiyen al-ish, and then eventually you'll have a ben Sayyidu Umayr. Says Rashi, I'm guaranteeing you, according to the Sifri, I'm guaranteeing you that although I permitted you to marry this woman, I'm telling you right now, it's not going to work. You're going to hate her, and the child that you're going to have together is going to be a ben Sayyidu Umayr. So the Chassam Sofer asked the Kasha, how could Hashem do this? How could Hashem allow something and tell you, I'm allowing you, but it's going to be a disaster? So why does Hashem allow it in the first place? Again, basic structure over here. Hashem allows us to live with this woman, but Hashem says, yeah, but I'm telling you, it's going to be a disaster. So why are you allowing me to do it? What's this whole relationship based on? Says Rashi, quoting from the Gemara, Le'dibrit Torah el keneged yetzahar. So the Mefarshim all asked the Kasha, really? That's the way Judaism works? That when the going gets tough, Hashem gives you a heter? I was under the impression that when Judaism gets hard, Judaism is hard. Right? When a person is tempted with a Nisayin to be Mechallel Shabbos, and not more than 50, 60 years ago, that was an unbelievable Nisayin for many Jews in America, was to work on Shabbos and not work on Shabbos. And many Jews did, and many Jews didn't. But no one ever said, they never came down from Shemayim. Hashem said, you know, I see it's too hard, I'll let you work on Shabbos. We didn't find that. We don't find that when the going gets tough, Hashem gives us heterim. Why over here does the Torah say that? So Tzvi Pesach Frank was one of the great Rabbonim and Poiskim in Yerushalayim in the 50, 60 years ago. So when they first started the discussion of women being drafted into the army, which was a big discussion about whether or not women should be forced to serve in the army so the Chazanish was very against it. So they came to Tzvi Pesach Frank, and Tzvi Pesach Frank said, let's think about this parasha for a second. If the Torah is permitting a Jew to marry a non-Jew because the Torah realizes that wartime is crazy, why would you want to send your daughters to such an environment? That was Tzvi Pesach Frank's argument. He said, think about this. This is the only place in Kol HaTorah Kulo where Hashem gives a heter. Why? Says Tzvi Pesach Frank, because wartime is wild. It's all bets are off. What's norm is no longer normal, and all regular structured ideologies and thoughts are gone. And that's where you want to bring your daughters? That's where you want your sister serving? That was Tzvi Pesach Frank's emotional argument to the Israeli government to why he thinks it's a bad idea to force women into the army. But the idea is very true, and Reb Koppelman repeats it as well. You see from over here, this is the only time, B'chol HaTorah Kulo, where Hashem gives us a heter to do something because it's too hard. Why? Because Hashem is very practical. Hashem says, listen, I understand war is crazy. War is not normal. This is not a normal time. I have to be practical, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says. And I have to realize that I need to give Klal Yisrael this heter. I need to give them this leeway. because we're not dealing with normal times. We're not dealing with a normal situation. War is not normal. Because war is not normal, why would you want to expose your daughters and your wives to something which is not normal? Which is something we've spoken about in the past, that many people confuse Judaism as a sexist religion, that we hold women to be second-class citizens. Rabbi Soloveitchik pointed out, I believe it was in last week's parsha, where we learned that a lady is not allowed to be a judge or a witness. So Rabbi Soloveitchik pointed out, and I saw Moshe Shtemach makes the same observation, that many people think, oh, women can't be judges or witnesses. Oh, that's because Judaism is a sexist religion. Said Rabbi Soloveitchik, it's exactly the contrary. You know what it means to be a judge? You know what it means to be a witness? It means you're front and center. It means everyone's looking at you, everyone's talking about you, everyone's focusing on you. Said Rabbi Soloveitchik, we hold our wives and our daughters to be so much better than that. We don't want them to be the focal point of every news magazine article front cover story. Because we have such reverence and respect for our women, we don't want them to be put through that situation. So it's not because we don't love them and respect them. It's because we value them so much, we don't want to expose them to such an environment, to such a situation. And therefore we don't want them being judges and witnesses and being involved in things where they're going to have to be front and centered and able to be, you know, attacked and to be able to be steered at and to be, you know, the topic of conversation. So here also, said Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank, why would you want to expose your daughters to such a toxic environment? You see, the Torah is telling you that it's such a wild time. Why would you want to expose your children? So Reb Koppelman points out that in Melchemes HaMitzvah, you don't have the parasha of Yifas Toyah. Why not? So Reb Koppelman says, because if it's a Melchemes HaMitzvah, the mitzvah is going to protect you. Since you're so involved in mitzvah, you're not going to have thoughts of women. If you're going to a Melchemes Rishos, so this is a voluntary battle, so then you're going to have Taiva, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu acknowledges your Taiva. But says Moshe Shtenbach, if you're going to a Melchemes HaMitzvah, so every step in the battle, every killing, every murder, it's a mitzvah! So you're still thinking mitzvah, you're not even thinking about the attractive woman in the battle. That's Rav Koppelman's take on it. Rav Moshe Shtenbach makes a different observation. Interesting observation. Who are these soldiers that we're talking about? This is the Melchemes Rishos. Who goes to Melchemes Rishos? Not every Tom, Dick, and Harry. To go to Melchemes Rishos, you have to pass the test from last week's parsha. You have to be someone that has no Averis, someone who doesn't speak between Tzilon Shayana and Tzilon Shoroish, someone who feels that he's not going to die in battle. So basically, you're picking, like the non-frum said, basically the Chafetz Chaim, and the Chaim Soloveitchik, and the Mayetz Gedali HaTorah, they're going to go to the battle. Because right, the rest of us, we're too nervous. All right, I don't think I can say with certainty that I'm ready to go to war because I'm clean, that I'm not going to get killed for Averis. I'm not that comfortable saying that. And I think most of us wouldn't be. So who's going to go to battle? Our Gedolim. The Gedolim of our generation that are, Naki or clean and living Torah lives that are to the fullest, they're going to be the soldiers. So now I have a basic kasha. You're telling me you're worried about they're the ones that are going to fall into trap, that they need to live with a Geisha woman? We're sending out the Mayetzes Gedolei HaTorah. We're sending out all the biggest Rosh Hashivas. Those are the guys that we're worried about? Please. Come on. That was on the pasuk. So, the Mefarshim are troubled with this. It's part of the Kasha. So some people answer, you're right. That's all part of the craziness and the unsettling of war. But Rav Moshe Shtenbach says, no, we learn from over here that only those people that are on that Madrega can be presented with such an Nisayon, and they'll figure out how to navigate it in the right way. Meaning they'll take the Yifas Toyar and they won't turn it into a bad situation. But Al Mechemes Mitzvah, where every Jew goes to Mechemes Mitzvah, you can't let every Jew be exposed to this option of marrying a non-Jewish woman. It's a recipe for disaster. It's not going to work out. It's not going to end in a positive way that they're going to only do what they're supposed to do and only just to get the taiva out. It's not going to be productive. And therefore, only for a small, very limited group of people, they are permitted to have a Yifas Toyar. But the question is still so strong. Chassam Sofer's kasha. If Hashem permits it, why am I ultimately going to have a failed relationship? Why is this relationship going to produce a Ben Sarah Meir? And I believe the answer is very simple. Because what is this relationship based on? Why did you marry this woman? Because she went to the best high schools and she went to the best seminaries and she was raised in the most Torah-dikah house and you think together with her you're going to raise wonderful children? No. Because she's pretty. She's attractive. There's nothing else working for her. The relationship is not based on anything spiritual. The relationship has no mamoshes to it. The relationship has no substantiveness to it. It's all based on physical attraction. Therefore, Zok Torah, such a relationship is not going to work. It's destined for destruction. It's not a punishment. Hashem is not punishing you. Hashem is saying, I'm just telling you, if your whole relationship is based on physical attraction, it's not going to be a relationship. When we go dating in our world, we look for much more than just a physical attraction. We look for hashkafas, ideology, how you want to raise your children, how you want to raise your house, what you want your house to look like, etc. Then your children have a chance to be raised in a way. But if your whole relationship is based on chitzonius, and there's nothing there, that, again, what other connections do you have to this non-Jewish woman? You don't have the same ideas. You weren't raised in the same upbringing. You don't share common ideologies. If it was just based on physical attractions, Dr. Taira, if the relationship is based on that, it is destined to ultimately fail. But then the Taira tells us that if you'll have two wives, one you'll hate and one you'll love. And Abarbanel makes the following observation. It says, Kisienel ish, and it will be to a man, shtei nashim, two wives, achas ahava v'achas nua. One he loves and one he hates. What do you mean when it will be? Shouldn't it be if it will be? Says the Bar Menal, it's not a question of if, it's just a question of when. Says the Bar Menal, if you take a Yefas Toyer, I am telling you, it will fail. It's not going to work. It's not a question of if it will fail, it's a question of when it will fail. But it will definitely fail. There is no way that this relationship between you and a non-Jewish woman who you picked up in battle is going to have any nitzchis. It's not going to have any substantive relationship that you're going to grow old together and retire together and, you know, see grandchildren and great-grandchildren like in our circles. It's not going to happen, says the Bar Menachem. It's not a question of if, it's merely a question of when. And then the Svarna points out over here that what is the continuation of the Parsha? He says, because after war, the next thing that the Torah talks about is in Yoni B'nei Hamedina. It talks about family life. That's the whole idea of the baby boomers. People came back from war, they settled down, and they had children. That's what happened after World War II. That's the baby boomer generation. Because after what happens normally is, when people come back from war, is they basically settle down. That's when their life starts to take on some normal structure, and they start to build a family. So it says this morning, right after we talk about war, then we talk about families. A guy has wives, and then we talk about banim, we're going to talk about having children, and then we're going to talk about your property, then we're going to talk about your dress, and we're going to talk about your homes, because that's just the normal process of life. You settle down, you have a family, you have children, you build a house, your job and your business all comes after that. And then we come to a very difficult parsha, the parsha of Ben Sayer Umair. One of the most difficult parshas in the Torah. The Gemara tells us it never even happened. There was never such a child that was so out of control that he was a Ben Sayer Umair. But what is the parsha of Ben Sayer Umair? The Torah tells us like this, Kiela ish Ben Sayer Umair. If there will be to a man, a child, a son, who sorer umayrer, he went off the derech, umayrer, says the Kotzke Rebbe, and he's affecting others. Not only is he bad on his own, but he's affecting others negatively. Said the Kotzke Rebbe, that's a red flag. That's no good. We can't have people affecting others negatively. And that's a very, very important message. And this is something Mechanachim grapple with all the time. When they have a child in a school who's not behaving, the first question is, how is he affecting those around him? If he's bringing down other children, he has to be removed. You can't bring down other people. So Zok the Kotzke Rebbe of Ben Sayre Umayr, not only is he Sayreir as he turned off the derech, but Umayre, he's educating others. He's causing others to go astray as well. But what does the Torah say about him? Einenu shemea b'kol aviv b'kol imoy. He does not listen to his parents. The Yisroel say, and they warned him below Yishmael, and he doesn't listen to them. His parents grab him. They bring him to the Bezdin, the local Bezdin. And the Mefarshim point that the local Bezdin, because mom and dad also need a little bit of a wake-up call. Perhaps they weren't mechanech the child as perfectly as they thought they did. They come to the Zikin, they say, our child is a disaster. He's fully engrossed in the pleasures of this world. And you know what they do? They take him out and they kill him. He's a pitzel, he's a little kid, he's 13 and a half years old. They take him out back and they stone him. Can you imagine being the parents of a Ben Sayre Umayr? You take your child by the hand, Tatala, you just turned bar mitzvah 6 months ago, and the last 6 months you've been out of control, you've been stealing, you've been drinking, you've been doing drugs, and you've been gambling, you've been doing cold over. Come, we're going to go take a trip. We're going on vacation. Where are we going? Oh, we're going to the local Bezdin. And the parents go through this whole procedure and they watch their son being murdered. Can you imagine that? Says the Ksav Sofer, look how the Torah describes these parents. Ki yeh le'ish ben Sayre Umayr. Ish is always connotes chashivas, important. Why are the parents of a ben Sayre Umayr considered important? Because they recognize their children's flaws. That is chashuv. We live in a society today where parents never want to acknowledge their children's mistake. They blame everyone except for themselves. It's the yeshiva's fault, it's the Rebbe's fault, it's the Rav's fault, it's the institution's fault. It's not my I've heard this from parents. My tatala, my son is not behaving. Can't be. Mine? Tzaddik. My child is the best kid in the world. What are you talking about? They never want to take responsibility for their children's shortcomings. Zok the Torah, ki el ish, you'll be a man. That what? That is willing to say, my kid is a disaster. My child is in a path that is dangerous. And this is something that parents should never have to deal with. You know, I hope and pray for parents that they should have an easy time raising children, myself included. But, you know, Nebuch, sometimes you have to make these hard decisions with your children. And those parents who don't make those tough decisions are not parents. They're not parents. They're lacking parenting. Because a parent means you're willing to step up and say, my kid has a problem. My kid needs help. My kid needs guidance. My kid needs hadracha. My kid needs a punishment. Whatever it may be. So Zok to Terry, if you want to know what's a real parent, who's an ish, who's chashiv, it's that parent that takes the kid by the hand and says, you're out of control. You're drinking, you're stealing, you're gambling, whatever else you do in Kol Dovera, you got to go. And the Torah that takes him, and he ultimately gets killed. They say over a story with the Chassam Sofer, that the Chassam Sofer was once dealing with a parent who lost a child at a young age, which no one should ever need to know of. It's a horrific experience. And this person was broken over the fact that they lost a child. And the Chassam Sofer said it was Niskala in a dream that this little child that died at the age of 6 or 7, if he would have raised to adulthood, if he would have survived, he would have been a Ben Sayre Meir, literally. He would have been a mess of a child. He just would have been a disaster to society. And Rashi tells us over here that we tell the parents, listen, it's better he goes this way. Yomos zakai v'al yomos chayiv. It's better that he goes now. And the parent was so comforted to hear that the sweet child at 7 or 8 died, even though at that time it was so hard for the parents, but they realized because the other option was he'd grow up to be just a menace. He'd grow up to be a disaster. He'd grow up to be a terror on society. And therefore it's better now that this child died at a young age. Again, not always a nechama for someone who loses a young child, but the Chassam Sofer found this to be very powerful in this week's parasha. But what's the whole idea of a Ben Sayre Meir? The idea of a Ben Sayre Meir is a child that is out of control. He's just out of control. Rabbi Cutler explained that it's what we'd call today an addiction. Today we have terms and we have medical treatments for a lot of these things, Baruch Hashem. And even in the firm world, we've acknowledged that we have serious addiction problems. And it took us a long time to get here. But Ashrecha, that we finally got here, you have wonderful organizations that deal with these problems. Because we as a nation, I mean the Jewish nation, have these problems. As much as we'd love, and we've had for too many years, brushed them under the carpet and said, Nisht ba'uns, we don't have this. We finally realize, yes, we do have this. And we need to deal with this in a healthy Jewish way. But Reb Aaron Cutler explained what the Ben Sayre Meir basically is. It's not just a kid who acts out. He's a kid who's addictive. It's addictive behavior. He's addicted to stealing. He's addicted to eating meat. He's addictive. That's not just it's a deeper level of behavior that is, at least at the time, the way the Torah understands it, is unfixable. Today, Baruch Hashem, we deal with people with addictions, and we can help them. We can get them weaned off of the addiction, whatever it may be. But the way the Torah describes it, this kid is beyond hope. And what's interesting about the Ben Sayre Meir is that he wasn't born a Ben Sayre Meir. It was slowly, 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 without any guidance, without anyone noticing, without anyone being on top of him, he quickly slipped down a very slippery slope. And that's sadly how a lot of these stories happen, is that people just... You don't wake up one day and you're addicted to drugs. You don't wake up one day and you're addicted to alcohol. It usually is a process that very often no one notices. I'm not blaming parents or rabbeim. Everyone is very busy. Everyone has a lot on their plates. But that's usually how it happens. It's it's a small hole that gets bigger with time to the point where it just becomes a very, very difficult situation. But the Torah still tells us that there'll never be. There never was, nor will there ever be a Ben Sayre Meir. So why does the Torah bother telling us this? So the Gemara tells us to give us schar for learning it. But the Kliyaka tells us such a powerful message for this time of the year. Says the Kliyaka, you know what the message of the Ben Sayre Meir is? The message of the Ben Sayre Meir is that we keep on saying to ourselves, we're safe. We don't have to worry about Elul Rosh Hashanah. We're Hashem's children. He loves us. Which parent would ever harm their child? Zok the Torah, Ben Sarah Amari, the parents are the first ones to take him to Bezin to have him killed. You think you're safe because you're a child? You think parents won't harm their children? Not true. Says the Kliyoka, the lesson of this week's parasha is, he says, you children wake up. Don't think you're beyond punishment. Don't think you're beyond anything. Be aware. You could be a child, and as a child, you can still get a very hefty punishment from your parents. Your parents can still be the ones to bring you to Bezin. So explains the Kliyoka, the connection to the Ben Seira Umayra. The famous kasha that everyone asks on this Rashi is that the Ben Seira Umayra gets killed al shem soifai. Masha asks this in Rosh Hashanah. Why was Esav not like that? We all know that the Torah tells us that when Esav was dying literally in the field, the Malach said, right now he doesn't deserve to get killed, so Esav was safe. So the Masha asks, I don't understand what happened to the Svara of al shem soifai. We know Yishmael. That we know ultimately Yishmael was going to create a lot of havoc for Klal Yisrael. So why didn't we just kill Yishmael then? I'll shame Sefer, but what's going to happen in the future? If you tell me it works that way, why didn't it work like that way for Yishmael? Many terutzim are given. I think perhaps the simplest answer is one is a reflection of your own doing, one is a reflection of your people. Yishmael is one person, and then there's the nation. So Yishmael is not necessarily blamed for what his nation does, as opposed to an individual is blamed for his future actions. There's a Gevaldig Gevard over here from Reb Chaim Kanievsky. It says in the Pasuk that you bring the Ben Seir Amir, because why? Einenu shemeya b'kol avivu b'kol imoy. He doesn't listen to mom's voice, and he doesn't listen to dad's voice. So the Gemara makes a drush in Sechus Sanhedrin that mom and dad have to have the same voice. It says Reb Chaim Kanievsky, you know what it means to have the same voice? It means mom and dad are pumping the same message. If a child is raised in a home where mom and dad are on the same page as hashkafically, and then the child veers off, he's held accountable. But says Reb Chaim Kanievsky, if a child is being raised in a home where mom's voice says one way and dad says something else, says Reb Chaim Kanievsky, he's not a Ben Sarah Mer, because it's not his fault. He's getting mixed messages from his parents. If the hashkafah in the home is not agreed upon by mom and dad, then children hear mixed messages. Says Reb Chaim Kanievsky, he's not held accountable for what he does. It's not his fault. Because he gives the kid mixed messages. Mom says, I want you to sit and learn all day. And dad says, I don't want you to learn Torah at all. What do you want from the kid? And this is so true in the world of chinuch today. If our children get mixed messages from us, they are not going to come out wholesome children. Because they're so confused. Mom says, this is okay. And dad says, this is okay. I hear sometimes so many times from parents, oh, when the child's with the mother, they're allowed to do this and this and this. But when dad's around, no, then we have to keep Chal Yisrael, Pas Yisrael, Bishol. What is the kid supposed to think to himself? That when mom it's okay to break this halacha, but when dad is out, what's going on over here? Says Reb Chaim Kanievsky, b'kol aviv b'kol imoy, the parents have to have the same voice. They have to have the same message. They have to be preaching the same ideology. And if they're not saying the same thing, the child is not to be blamed for his shortcomings. Because he's a product of an unhealthy environment, because it's not clear the message of chinuch, and therefore says Reb Chaim Kanievsky, such a child is not deemed, is not considered a Ben Seir Umayri. Chaskel Abramsky was a Rav under the communist Russia. A very difficult time he had. He was put into Siberia for trying to flee Russia for 5 years. We've spoken about that in the past. But a parent once came to Chaskel Abramsky and said, Rabbi, I have a question. I have a request of you. I want you to daven that my son should die. Chaskel Abramsky said, why should I daven for your son should die? So the lady said, I want you to know I have one son. That's all I have. And he just got drafted into the Russian army. And we all know the Russian army is a death sentence for a spiritual life. He didn't come out of the Russian army after a very long stint in the army with very strong Jewish hashkafas. So the woman said, I'd rather my son die than be drafted into the army and live a non-religious life. Said Chaskel Abramsky, I have a better idea. Let's daven that he should be a frum yid in the army. And kachave. This Yid was able to survive the Russian army, which was not simple at all, and come out to be a frum Yid. Reb Chaskel Abramsky told his Talmidim in Eretz Yisrael when they were learning the sugyas of Ben Seir Umayra. Said Reb Chaskel Abramsky, I know the pain of a parent. I saw it with my own eyes. I saw a parent that wanted her son to die. Because better die from than live not from. That's the message of the Ben Seir Umayra, said Reb Chaskel Abramsky to his Talmidim. I saw it, he said. I saw a parent that cared so much about their child that they said, I'd rather he die now. And I won't enjoy having him around in this world because better he die as zakai v'al yom was chayiv. And Rabbeinu Bechaya tells us that the lesson of Ben Tzayir Meir is that as much as we love our children, we have to love Hashem more. Because basically a Ben Tzayir Meir's parents' decision is, where's my loyalty? Is my loyalty to my child or my loyalty to Hashem? Says Rabbeinu Bechaya that the lesson of the Ben Tzayir Meir is that as much as we love our children, and we all do, we love Hashem even more. And our loyalty is to Hashem. And if this child is not behaving in the way that makes Hashem happy, then our love to our children is not going to affect what we do or what we don't do. Because our ultimate loyalty, our deepest love, says Rabbeinu Bechaya, is to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then we have to mention the famous Yushalmi. We've mentioned it so many times, but it's always worth mentioning. The Yushalmi says that when does a child become a Ben Tzayir Meir? When he steals and when he eats basar, and he forgets his learning. Fractim Chaim Shmulevitz. That's what we're worried about. The kid is an addict. He's stealing food from his father. He's stealing money for his father to feed his addiction. He's robbing banks so he can feed his addiction. He's terrorizing the community. But until he forgets Kivegas Chakira from last week's shir, not a Ben Tzayir Meir. This kid is a total out of control. But as long as he, in the back of his mind, he remembers, I once learned a Gemara in Masechta Shabbos about Hidur Mitzvah, and I remember a Chakira, he's okay. Said Chaim Shulevitz, yes, that is the Kayach HaTorah. As long as a person has Torah in his brain, bouncing around his mind, even though he has fallen to the depths of society, he's not game over yet. We can still pull him back. He can be saved. He can salvage his life. However, says Yushami, the moment Torah is gone, it's all over. If he doesn't remember anything he learned in yeshiva, there all hope is gone. It's such an empowering message to the Chashivas HaTorah. We often forget the power of Torah, that Torah can bring back a Ben Tzayir Meir. Torah can save this lost soul who's totally off the deep end. Whatever term you want to use for today's children, he's gone. But as long as he still has in his mind, I remember the Gemara, I remember the Mishnah, I remember the Pasuk, I remember Torah, says Yushami, there's still a chance for him to come back, to be saved, and to do a tshuva. Okay, there's so much more to get to. We're going to try to go a little faster to try to cover as much as we can over here. The Torah then continues to discuss the idea of loisire eshar achicha iseyo nidochim islamdem, and helping another Jew. A person sees his friend's animal is in trouble, you have to help him. You have to return it. The idea of Shabbos Aveda. If your brother is not close, and you take it in and you guard it. So the Chassam Sofer learns that this pasuk is not just referring to your friend's lost objects, it's referring to your friend who has strayed from Judaism. Help him. Bring him back to Yiddishkeit. Bring him back to Torah. Help him find his way back to the point where he'll be comfortable in Yiddishkeit. Rav Matisyahu Salman points out that when the Torah talks about helping and Aveda, it keeps on using the word Achicha. It says the word Aveda is Achicha. So obviously the Pashup Shad is it's coming to exclude a guy. But says Rav Matisyahu Salman, it's supposed to create a closeness. Why do I have to help you? Why do I have to take care of your loss? Because we're brothers. If I was driving down the road and I knew my brother had a flat tire, would I just drive past? I would never do it. So we have to look at each other as Jews, as achicha. When I see my fellow Jew, he does not my biological brother. He might not even look like me. He might not dress like me. He might not have the same hashkafas as me. Zogman to Solomon, the idea has to be that we have to feel a unity. We have to feel an achicha. We have to feel a closeness. A few weeks ago, I was in the mountains for a vart, and I was driving. I think it was down the 17, and I saw a car pulled over on the side. Chassidish family. So I pulled over. I thought maybe I'd help. I said to him, you need my help? Again, I'm the last guy to do anything with a car. I don't have two left hands. I have four left hands. So I'm the last guy that's going to help you. But you know, today's day and age, you never know if you can help someone. Who knows? So I asked him, do you need any help? He said, no, Baruch Hashem. Chaverim is coming. Chassidish guy, I had no idea who he was. So I think one of my kids asked me, they said, why'd you pull over? He said, because you see a frum guy on the side of the road. You know, he needs help. You assume he needs your help, so try to help him. Why not? On the 17, if you're on Route 17 these months, you know it's a Jewish frum guy that needs help. I'm not saying you shouldn't pull over on a regular time, But you know who it is. You know the score. It's a 17. It's the summer. You know who needs help. So why not? It cost me nothing. Just be careful. I learned the hard way. You got to be careful. When you get off, when you pull over on the 17, make sure you're really over on the side, because those cars go really fast down. When you come out of the driver's side, you're very close to the highway. Nebuch, there are stories of people that really have gotten hurt. So be careful when you get out of the car. But in any case, why not? Why not? It doesn't cost you anything. If that was your brother, you'd pull over. For sure you would. If that was your third cousin, you'd pull over. So he's your brother. He's a chicha. And therefore, the Torah keeps on reminding us that this is your brother, and it's supposed to help us build a closeness. You know, it's amazing. We have in our communities chaveru. We have atzala. We have wonderful organizations. When they get a call, do they ask, okay, by the way, what shul do you daven in? Because I'm only coming if you're like me. I'm only going to come help you fix your flat tire if you daven the same hashkafa that I have. Because if you're different than me, I'm not coming to fix your tire. Of course not. We go, because a Jew calls, we go. That's it. Doesn't matter about your hashkafic values, background, what you do and what you don't do. Because that's the unity of Klal Yisrael. And that's what the message over here is, when it keeps on reminding us, achicha, achicha, loisucha le'salim. Said about this, Solomon, it's not just that you're not allowed to overlook it. You shouldn't want loisucha, you shouldn't be able to. You wouldn't be able to overlook if your brother is suffering. And you shouldn't be able to overlook if another Jew is suffering. Because you feel so connected, you feel so unified, that you're not able to overlook and just continue on business as usual when your brother is suffering. Terry also says, you have to help out the animal. Throughout this week's parasha, there's a lot of discussion about animals. You have to treat animals properly. You're not allowed to be. Most Rishonim learn that it has to do with Tzar Balachayim. So Rav Pam pointed out that we as Jews are very sensitive towards animals. We're very, very pro-animal rights. We hold Tzar Balachayim Deraisa. You can't cause pain and anguish to animals. We're very careful with the way we treat animals. Ironically enough, during the Holocaust, the Germans would treat the dogs better than they would Jews. There was actually a time where they delayed one of the transports of the Jews out of the ghettos or out of the communities because they didn't know who was going to take care of the Jews' pets. They were so worried about the Jewish pets, therefore they couldn't deport the Jews because who would take care of the Jewish pets? That's what they were worried about. Jewish life means nothing to them, but the pets mean something to them. But we as Jews believe in the value of animals. Tzar Baal Chaim. But Tzedev Pam, that should only teach us that if we're not supposed to cause pain and anguish to humans, to animals, Kol Shekein Ben B'nei Shel Kal V'Chomer, we're not allowed to cause pain and anguish to humans. And Rav Pam said over a story once where a Kollel wife came to him crying. She said she's overwhelmed. She's overwhelmed with the household responsibilities. She's overwhelmed with the children. And her husband's learning all day long, and he's just doing his own thing. And his answer to her was, the house and the family is your responsibility, my responsibility is my learning. And Rav Pam yelled at the guy. He said, that's not true. Look at her. She's in pain. She's suffering. If an animal is suffering, you're not allowed to... I don't mean to compare a chas v'shalom lady to an animal. But Dr. Rav Pam, if we're so careful we treat animals, what about if a person is suffering? A person is suffering, you're not going to help ease their pain? You're going to let them continue on in their pain? Rav Pam was well known for his ability to help out in the house. They say Rav Pam used to make the potato kugel on Friday afternoon. They say his wife worked in the public school. It always makes me feel good to hear that. Because my wife works in the public school. Okay, so me and Rav Pam shared something similar. I don't make the potato cooker, but I try to help around the house as much as I can. One of the recent svarim that came out, they said that he wrote this fellow wrote a sefer when he came to Rav Pam's house. He saw Rav Pam was vacuuming the carpet on a Friday afternoon, and he took such a chizik at watching his Rosh Hashiva. Rav Pam was a gadol, a great leader. He was vacuuming the carpet. That is sometimes I do. I can vacuum the carpet off. I can't make potato cooker too much. I can peel the potatoes, but after that it gets confusing. But it's called balancing the responsibilities, sharing in the oil, sharing in the pain and the suffering of another person. Kosher against someone who's a spouse who you're trying to share. I always say there's no jobs in marriages. Every relationship is different. Some relationships it works this way. Some relationships it works that way. Sometimes the husband's role will be different than the woman's role. Again, today is very different than the previous generations. Today, fathers are much more hands-on. Fathers change diapers. Fathers give baths, and fathers do a lot more than they used to do. Right or wrong, I'm not getting into that, but the rules have changed. And we have to just be aware of that. We can't be, it's pastish for a father to change a diaper. It's very past, yeah. I changed tons of diapers. It's very past, yeah. You change a diaper because the diaper needs to get changed. None of these, it's beneath, it's beyond. These words don't really exist anymore in today's time. Okay, in any case, then the Torah moves on to another parasha about wearing cross-dressing. Lo yekli gever al isha v'lo yibash gever simlas isha. This is the parasha of cross-dressing. I don't mean to sound so negative, but it is a problem in our community also. I know it sounds weird to believe it, but it is. Okay? Not for now, but there is such a thing out there in our community as well. Because again, every problem that exists in the secular world creeps into our community, just a question of when it comes. But I know I wasn't involved personally. I was secondhand involved in the situation of a cross-dressing issue. But in any case, the Torah writes the prohibition in this week's parsha. There's a famous Targum Yonason, we've quoted it in the past. The Targum Yonason writes in this pasuk, Lo yeh klei gever al isha v'lo yibash gever simlas isha. This is referring to tzitzis and tefillin. That if a lady were to wear tzitzis and tefillin, she'd violate the iser of wearing men's clothing. We mentioned that that's not the pashtus l'halacha. The pashtus in halacha is that the only reason why a lady is not allowed to wear tzitzis and tefillin is not because it would be a violation of beged ish, but instead it's because since they don't have to wear it, why should they wear it? Because it's an issue of gufnaki. We discussed that in the past. The reason why women don't wear tefillin is not because women are not more hygienic than men are. Women are probably more hygienic than men are. It's just that men have a mitzvah to do it. So we push ourselves to wear tefillin and we try to make sure we have a gufnaki. But since women don't have an obligation, why should they put themselves into that situation? But the Targum Yonason, this week's parasha, writes that a woman wearing talis and tefillin is considered beged ish. Someone called me up a few months ago about a lady going shooting range. That's using a gun. That's pashtus what the Torah is talking about over there. Lo yikle gever is referring to soldiers. Is a woman allowed to use a gun, allowed to shoot a gun? A whole discussion in Paiskim about women using guns, shooting guns, things like that. The Mefarshim point out that we have a famous story in Navi about Yael, how Yael killed the general, but she didn't use a sword. Why didn't she use a sword? Because sword is begedish. That's klei gever. She bedavka used a peg. She used a yeset instead of using a sword because that might violate the iser of using klei gever. Okay. Then the Torah discusses the parasha of Kan Tzipor, the famous parasha of Shluach HaKan. What exactly is the idea behind Shluach HaKan? The message of Shluach HaKan is that the way Rav Rishonim learn, it's that the compassion that we have to take towards people. It's not fair to take the eggs while the mother's there. The mother gives so much, so devoted, such a loving mother to its eggs. You have to shalach, You have to send it away. It's not fair. It's not just to cause that amount of anguish and pain to the mother. And therefore, we send the mother away. It's brought down, and I think in a couple of places, that Shluach HaKan is a big skula. Many people today do Shluach HaKan because it's a skula. It's supposed to be a skula to building a house, to have a house. It's supposed to be a skula to have children. It's a very, very big skula. But it's interesting. Rashi says that Shluach HaKan is a mitzvah kala. It's an easy mitzvah. Why is it such an easy mitzvah? So the Ger Rebbe explained that the way to do a mitzvah, the best way is to do it in a way that no one knows about it. Shashtil, under the radar. You don't make it to the front page of the news. Says the Ger Rebbe, that is Shluach HaKan. Shluach HaKan is the epitome of a non-famous mitzvah. Now, it's not true today. Today, whenever Shluach HaKan happens, it's front page of the Jewish news. Oh, Shluach HaKan, someone did Shluach HaKan. It's not supposed to be that way. Shluach HaKan is supposed to be that mitzvah that goes under the radar, not known, shashtil. That's why it's a mitzvah kala. A mitzvah that doesn't have fanfare is a mitzvah that's very much beloved in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Then we have the mitzvah of makkah, building a fence around your house. We spoke about this in the Halacha Shir, that this might be one of the sources about getting vaccinated. You're not allowed to expose others to danger. I'm not allowed to build a house in a way that someone can get harmed, and therefore perhaps I'm also not allowed to have a situation where people can get harmed or endangered by, or affected by my environment, by my situation. Then we have the mitzvah of tzitzis. Then we'll just fast forward again, very short on time. We'll discuss the mitzvah of... Then we come to the parasha of who's allowed to marry into Klal Yisrael. And it's amazing. Amoinu Moyav is not permitted to come to Klal Yisrael ever. Lo yavoi lohem b'kal Hashem ad olam. Amoini umayavi are not allowed to marry into Klal Yisrael ever. But do you know who's allowed to marry into Klal Yisrael? Oh, Mitzrayim, Egyptians. Egyptians? Do you not remember the whole Pesach story? For 200 years, they for hundreds of years, they ruined our lives. But they're allowed to come in Dor Shlishi. Amoinu Moyav? No. Amoinu Moyav, you have to stay out ever and ever. Why? So look to Torah. Al advar shalakidmu eschem alechem b'mayim. Because you didn't offer us bread and water when we were traveling. And because you hired Bilam to curse us. Says the Dubna Magid, what's these two claims? He says the two claims complement each other. Why? The first claim was you didn't do chesed. Well, maybe you tell me the reason why we didn't do chesed is because we didn't have enough food to share with you. We were poor. We didn't have enough bread to go around. On that says the Torah, you were wealthy. You had money to give to Bilam. Don't cry poverty to me. Don't say to me the reason why you didn't give us bread and water when we were traveling is because you had no access. You did. You had money. How do I know I had money? It's up to Torah. Because Asher Sach Alecha Bilam Ben Boy, you found the money when it came to hiring Bilam, you had the money. So it's up to Dubna Maga, the two reasons complement each other. But all the Mepharshim point out, we learn from over here such a very important lesson. We learn from over here that the Tain on Amnu Moiv is you're not a Bal Chesed. People that are not Bal Chesedim can't be in Klal Yisrael. We are a nation of Goyim L'Chesedim. We are a nation of giving, of compassionate. If Amnu Moiv was not willing to help, they are not compassionate, they cannot join Klal Yisrael. So why is Mitzrayim allowed in? So some of the Mepharshim explain, Mitzrayim had a good reason to be afraid of us. They had propaganda. They thought we were a threat to them. Fine. Maybe not the best reason, but perhaps a justification. Amnon Umayyad had no skin in the game. Amnon Umayyad just wanted to wreak havoc. If your agenda is just to be mean and ruthless, you can't join Klal Yisrael. Mitzrayim had a cheshbon. They had a taina. They thought Klal Yisrael was going to revolt and overtake the country. Okay, fine. So therefore, they're not held on the same standard as Amnon Umayyad. They're allowed to come in Dor Shlishi. But Amnon Umayyad were just ruthless. Nothing there. They are not allowed to join into Klal Yisrael. Then we have the parasha of Ribbis, which we discussed at length in the Halacha Shir, the sugyas of Ribbis. But Rabbi Yeruchim points out that the site of Ribbis, and this is something we said before, what's wrong with charging interest? A Jew comes to me and he says, listen, I want to borrow money. I say, no problem. Here's the money, but I want to make a profit on it. Said Rabbi Yeruchim, you know what the problem is? You're still thinking about me. I'm asking myself, how can I gain from this? A person sometimes in life has to put the I out of the equation. It's not about me. It's not how can I turn a profit on helping you. It's me just helping you, period. No kickbacks. The reason why the Torah asked the Ribbis of Rabbi Yeruchim is because we want it to be that you finally do something for the sake of good without you getting something out of it. Nothing about you. Ribbis is me. I want to get a kickback. I want to gain from it. We mentioned in the past the famous Kliyoker. The Kliyoker says that the idea of Ribbis is that when you lend...
I usually don't ask questions or tell something you know about Chumash here. But I've certainly devolved the divorce from Rabbi Feitman about I. I'm going to ask you, mind if I say it? It's a quick one.
Please, Michael.
Okay, so Rabbi Feitman, I don't know if anybody or everybody knows, came out with a safer called Blueprints. So, it's a wonderful statement, and he went to school Kamenetsky to try and get a scum on it. So, he told the secretary, you know, come to speak during school, you know, could you please have put in there the beginning of that scum that I know Rabbi Feitman for many, many, many years. So, the school was blowing that scum, sent it to Rabbi Feitman, and the secretary calls up Rabbi Feitman and says, listen, I know you had asked me to put in this, you know, that I know for many years.
That's beautiful. That's a very important message. That we often focus our lives about what can I get out of a situation. Many times we approach a situation, where do I stand? So I'll give you Yeruchim. Promise this is word from Yeruchim. Thank you, Michael. This is word from Yeruchim that it's not about me. It's about helping another person. So the Kliyoker says that the reason why Ribbis is also is because if you know that you're going to get back the guaranteed money, you take Hashem out of the equation. That's the problem. The problem with Ribbis is you say to yourself, I know I'm going to get it back. It's guaranteed. The money is in the bank. So the Kliyoker, that took HaKadosh Baruch out of the equation. So for the Kliyoker, so why is it mutter with a guy? Says the Kliyoker, because with a guy, you don't know for sure. The guy can always pull a quick one on you. He'll pull a trick on you. He'll not pay you, whatever it is. So Hashem is in the equation. Dr. Kliyoker, when you take Hashem out of the equation, that's when it becomes a problem. And then we have in this week's parasha, the parasha of Kiddushin and the parasha of Gerushin. The whole sugyas we discussed at length, Sunday morning, Baruch Hashem, getting the Kiddushin. We've discussed much, much about both those topics. But I just want to say over two famous mices about the sugya of Gerushin. Two very famous stories. There's a story with Rabbi Kiveger once, where Rabbi Kiveger was once visiting a town, and the Rav said, Rabbi Kiveger, we need your help. We're dealing with a situation where there's a man married to a woman, and he went off the derech. He became a mishumad. He went off the derech and refuses to give his wife a get. He's being a real jerk that we still have today, husbands that are doing these types of games. He doesn't want to give his wife a get. Maybe you, Kveg, the God of Ador, maybe you can give me some eights of what do I do with this guy. So Kveg said, let me go talk to the guy. So Kveg meets with this fellow, and he tells the fellow, you know, what's going on over there? The guy says, no, I'm not giving a get. I'm going to ruin this girl's life. I'm going to do what I want. So Kveg said to him, come here. He said, I know you're a mishumad. You used to learn in yeshiva. He says, let me remind you of something. There's a famous Mishnah in Daf Beis Amud Aleph in Kedusha. Says in the Mishnah, Yisha Niktas B'Shloisha Drachim, a lady is acquired in three ways, and a lady goes free in two ways. Says the Kveg, let me tell you. Says in the Mishnah, she goes two ways. One way is with a get, and the other way is with Mises Abal. The husband dies. So as the Kveg is walking the fellow out of the house, he falls. This Mishabat falls on the steps, and he dies. That's the famous Kveg story. That's one story. Then there's a very famous Mice with Moshe Feinstein. A lady comes to Moshe Feinstein one day and she says, I am a survivor from the Holocaust and I was told by Rabbi so-and-so that my husband died in the Holocaust and I'm allowed to remarry. So Kachavi, I remarried and Baruch Hashem, I had children. And just recently, my original husband returned. And now I have all these children, they're suffering mamzerim, what do I do now? So Moshe said to her, tell me the story again. So she says, okay, Rabbi, I'll tell you a story. I was in the Holocaust, and after the Holocaust, Rabbi so-and-so told me, I'm allowed to remarry, and I remarried. And Moshe said, okay, tell me the story one more time. So everyone in the room is trying to figure out what is going on over there. So Moshe, after he hears the story for the third time, Moshe gets up and says, can it Zayn? It can't be. This story is not true. And Moshe said the following, and this is just amazing. Moshe said, the Rav who you said is an unbelievable Talmud Chacham. He is so much bigger than me. And I said Rav Moshe was matir 2,000 agunas. Never once did the husband come back. And this Rav, who's much bigger than me, there's no way that he would be nichshal, that the husband would come back. And the lady broke down and she said, you're right. I just used that rabbi's name. I never really got permission from this rabbi, but I knew he's such a big name, I figured if I throw his name out, it will work. Now the godless of that Maisa is that Rav Moshe Feinstein said about himself that he was matir 2,000 agunas, and never once did it ever backfire. And Rav Moshe was saying about himself that this gadol is bigger than him. That's the godless of a gadol, that he felt so comfortable knowing what he was doing was right, and never ever did they ever come back and say, oh yeah, you missed Rav Moshe, no, the husband really survived. They say a similar maisa with Rav Shlomo Igra. And Rav Shlomo Igra was the Rav right before the Chassam Sofer. Right before the Chassam Sofer took over the shtela that he had the Chassam Sofer was in Hungary. What's the name? I'm forgetting it now. Oive. It's past my bedtime. The Chassam Sofer was the Rav in Hungary Okay. So right before Rav Chassam Sofer came there was Rav Shlomo Igra was the Rav of the town. So they say over a famous Maisa that Rav Shlomo Igra was being reading a ksub at a chasana. And it was a case of a kohen that was marrying a almona, which is mutter. And when Rav Shlomo Igra read the ksuba, he read it as a grusha. And they said, no, Rabbi, she's an almona, she's not a grusha. So he said, okay, we'll start again. And he reads the ksuba again, and he reads it as a grusha. So they corrected him again, and he said to himself, something's not right over here. There must be some reason why I keep on reading grusha instead of almona. So he asked the lady, he said, by the way, were you ever previously married? She said, no, almona, I'm not a grusha, no, almona. Finally, after enough time, she broke down and she admitted that Shitaka was a grusha from a previous relationship. She was an almona also. But she finally broke down that she was Taka a grusha, and Rav Shlomo Igra was able to prevent this chasana from taking place. He just had a sense. He just felt that something wasn't right. He just can tell that something was missing.
Based on a Sunday morning
she might be a Katlanis already, yeah. Pressburg, that's what Chassam Sofer was there of. Okay, in Pressburg. There's a famous story from Shlomo Igra and the Chassam Sofer. I like this story because I used it in my shul. That when the Chassam Sofer come, the first Shabbos the Chassam Sofer took over, he didn't like the Erev of Rav Shlomo Igra. He didn't like the way he structured the Erev. But it took him for like a year until he changed it. So they asked the Chassam Sofer why. He said, because the first thing I do, I don't have to change everything that my first day on the job. I don't have to change everything there. So it takes me time until I get around to changing everything, the way I like it. That's the famous story with the Mishal Migra. There's a vart, the Mishnah says in the end of Maseches Gittin that one of the reasons you could divorce your wife is if she burns the dish. She burns the supper, she gets divorced. So I think I saw the kasha from Rashi Shtam, because I said, what? That's the way we keep the sanctity of marriage. If she burns the supper, she gets destroyed, she gets divorced. He said, no. She burnt your supper. Not because she was... She bedavka burnt your supper. The rest of the family got perfect chicken. You, she lahachas burnt your supper. Such a matzav, then already it's permissible to be able to divorce her. In this week's parasha, we have Gittin, Kedushin, Yibum, all the jam-packed sugyas that we've discussed in many different places throughout our time together. And then, just we'll leave off with this, that the Torah says that the parasha of Malkus in this week's parasha. In the parasha of Malkus, it says in the Torah, Abo'im Yakenu, 40 Malkus you should get. And we know, Chazal learned, it's really 39. So they say over that the godless of a Rav is someone who can limit a Jew's pain. Instead of a Jew getting 40, Chazal learned this 39, that means you're limiting the pain and suffering that a Jew has to experience. That's a great person. A person can limit someone else's sorrow, someone else's pain, that is also considered godless. And we'll just end off with this vort. You know, many people like to throw around that, you know, Mishkav Zachar is a Te'eva. And we're as Jews, we're against homosexuality, we're against all that because it's Te'eva. But there's another thing that the Torah also calls a Te'eva, which maybe we're not so against. The Torah says, "Lo yibecha beveisecha eifa ve'eifa gedol kana." Evan Shlem v'tzedik. You know, cheating in business, the Torah also calls a te'eva. Ki ta'ev as Hashem elakecha kol ha'se'ela. Hashem calls that a te'eva also. So we're so quick to speak negative of those people, and again, obviously, the Torah speaks against te'eva. But what about in business? If we're not honest in business, we're also called an abomination to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Let's not lose sight of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu values. HaKadosh Baruch Hu values honesty in business as well. And if we're not living an honest business lifestyle, we are also falling into the trap, into the idea of a Te'eva. Okay? Everybody say, have a wonderful week. We'll meet each other. We'll meet again in Mitzvah Shem Sunday morning at 9:15. Be well. Have a wonderful Shabbat.